Hello, and welcome back, everyone, to an episode of The Money Seat, the show where I put myself on the hot seat. Today's guest is Dr. Deanna, and she's going to ask me 5 questions related to finance, to money, and she has not sent me these questions beforehand, so I'm very interested to hearing what they have. I'll be hearing them as soon as you do, and I hope we have some good spirited conversation. And I'll have her introduce herself right away.
Hi, everybody. I am Dr. Deanna. I'm a chiropractor here in Issaquah, Washington, outside Seattle. I'm originally from Chicago, and I've been here for about 3 years. That's me.
So what school did you go to get your chiropractic degree?
I went to Life Chiropractic College West in the Bay Area, in California.
And have you always been a chiropractor?
No, well, before chiropractic school, my undergraduate degree was actually in fashion. I was a fashion business major in undergrad, and I had a little fashion career first. And then when I was about 26, I had a quarter-life crisis and felt very unfulfilled by fashion and to do something new. And I kind of fell into chiropractic.
Okay. So you're like a lot of people who were just kind of finding themselves in their 20s about what they wanted to do. So a little bit later in life.
Exactly. Classic millennial, needed to be more fulfilled. And so always chasing the ultimate fulfillment.
That's good. And then just so the audience can know you a little bit better, are you married, single, kids, no kids?
I am single. I live with my French bulldog. It's just been rangering me for 7 years. So if you know single men, hit me up.
In the Seattle area. Yeah.
In the Seattle area.
Yeah. What's your...
like tall, over 6 feet.
That's... That's very specific, yeah. What's your dog's name?
Ranger
the bulldog.
Yeah.
Okay, and he's hanging out with you while you do this?
No, he had to be banished to the other room because he breathes too loudly.
Okay. We appreciate that. Everyone would be listening to the podcast and be really creeped out by some hovering, breathing creature next to you. So,
I think it's adorable,
but yeah. Well, if we had video, I could show my dog sleeps next to me too. He doesn't make any noise, so you wouldn't even know that my dog's been joining on every episode I've shot for podcast, sleeping.
He's
right
learning
next
a lot
to me.
About finance. Your
he,
dog.
Yeah. If he could hear, he would learn. He would have learned. He would have learned a lot. Yeah. So perfect. So thanks for introducing yourself, and we know you a little bit better. Why don't you start with question number one, and we'll see how that goes.
Okay, so as we've already established, I am a chiropractor and recently, as of 3 years ago, graduated from chiropractic school. And I have a lot of debt.
Yes.
My student loan debt is, I will proudly say, at this moment, I actually meant to look up the exact number this morning. I totally forgot, but it is somewhere around $320,000.
Oh.
And,
wow.
Well, it's not building thanks to COVID. Right, it's
yeah.
been on pause.
Okay.
But, like, I mean, it has gone up until they froze that the interest because of COVID. It was just going... When I graduated, I think it was, like, 310, and now it's 320 because of the interest. So it is climbing.
Okay.
My first question is, do you know any rich Jewish men I can marry?
That's a great question. I'm thinking about bringing everyone back so they could ask me one non-financial related question.
Well, that's mine. And for the listeners too, I'm just kidding. I'm seriously just kidding. They don't actually have to be Jewish.
Right. Just so you know.
Men, that, I don't care. Rich and tall.
That okay. That 6 foot thing makes it very hard to also find some Jews. I know a few. One of them might be Jewish. Yeah.
Is he single? Okay. So anyway, you can think about that one.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, so I'm currently on income-driven repayment plan,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm paying like the bare minimum, which it doesn't even cover the interest.
Right.
Which I think my interest is like 7%. I'm getting all this information from my father. He's the one that tells me this stuff because I have no idea what I'm doing in this area.
Okay.
So, okay. So I've had a couple questions about it. So my first question is, so I'm paying the income driven repayment and like the first year it was $0 a month. And then it was, because it's like, I guess it has to do with my income the previous year.
Yeah.
And then beginning of 2020, it was $40 a month. And then it froze for COVID. And then I reapply, because you have to reapply each year. And this year, I mean, they extended the COVID thing till the end of September, but now it's $288 a month.
Yeah.
So it keeps getting higher, obviously, because my income's getting higher. But people keep saying, like, I should, even though, like, it's, I don't have to pay anything and the interest isn't building for this COVID thing, that I should like still be paying something each month. Like, but does it actually matter? I mean, if I pay $100 a month, it's $320,000, right, Ross. Like, what is it actually going to do? I'd rather buy like new jeans.
Yeah. Okay. So those are, I'm going to consider that all question 1A, 1B, 1C, and 1D. And you know, I'm glad you asked that, because you're the first person to ask a student, you know, loan/debt question. But obviously we know millions of people feel the same terrible mental burden and stress and financial burden as well that you do. I don't know if it's as high. You're congrats. Of everyone I worked with, you're number one. So yeah. I don't have anything for you, but congrats on that.
That's something.
Can I ask, I assume that was built through your, you know, you probably had a degree to get the fashion and then you moved over, so you probably had a few different degrees that combined to that, or is that all just chiropractic?
A little bit of, I don't know how much of it's my undergrad. I think maybe like 40,000 of it. And then I took out, like, because it was a school graduate plus loan, so like all my living expenses and stuff, so I took out the maximum. Like, I could have done it smarter. I have friends who probably got out of chiropractic school with like $150,000 of debt. Like,
yeah, that's probably that like seems more normal
though, but that's like cut, like being, I wouldn't do it differently. I loved chiropractic school. I don't want to be poor.
Okay. Well, also you were in the Bay Area, so you just multiply everything by like five. And that's, so it's really like $150,000 for a regular person in a regular city.
Exactly.
So, and that helps gain insight, because part of this too, what I'm doing is I want to educate people, you know. What you really could have used, and most people could have used in high school or before that, was a class about, you know, student loans and managing debt in this, and not a waste of, you know, calculus, to be honest. But that's not what happens. And most of the time you end up in these situations and you're like, oh, great, now what do I do? And it's a little bit of the, one of the cliche, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time. And that's really what it is. I'm going to ask you a few more questions, though. So let's say about $300,000 of debt, 7% interest rate, you said?
I think. Again, I'm just going by what my dad says.
Do you know any more information about it, as in if there's a 10 or 20-year forgiveness? Sometimes they have
I think it's like 25 years, 20 or 25 years.
And how many years are you into it?
Two, three.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was hoping maybe you were like, it was 20 years and you were like 5 years in and be like, well, okay. Right. Yeah. Because, I mean, this is definitely a serious issue, because you have other things you want to do, right, in life that are more fun, and you don't want to have to do this till you're in your 50s. That'd be terrible. So have you looked at restructuring it at all, or contacting?
That was my next question.
Okay. All right, so that's one thing you can do. I'd have to know more, obviously, about, you know, the program and the loans. But I know there's a lot of organizations out there that can help people like you, because you've just been saddled with an insurmountable amount of debt. That's just the reality of it. You would have to be putting away like $2,000 or $3,000 a month to even bite into that over the next 20 years. And that's insane. You know,
it's crazy. I have a friend.
It's insane.
She's been practicing now. She's also a chiropractor. She's been practicing for, I think, like 7 or 8 years. And she's still doing income-driven repayment. But because she has, like, a thriving practice now, her payments are like $1,500 a month. And it's, I think, and this was as of like 2 years ago, her balance is still higher than it was when she graduated.
Right. It's a system that's set up for failure, unfortunately. And it's a system to set up young people to not have financial freedom and to feel this just like, I don't know, like you're just pushing a boulder up the hill and then it just keeps rolling back down once you get anywhere. And imagine once again, if you then wanted to buy a house or have a family and have kids. And I mean, it's just, I couldn't imagine doing all that. It's just not, it's not possible. So there's ways around that. One is the income-driven thing is actually really helpful because, to be honest, you're never going to pay that off. It's not possible to pay off $300,000 in 20 years unless you inherited, you know, unless you won the lottery or some insane thing. That's not going to happen.
Where the rich husband comes in.
Right. Yeah. That have to be really... yeah, some, you'd have to find some like sheik in like the Middle East or something.
They'll take it.
Right. So that might be a plan B, and that might have a few percent chance of working, and you know, we'll throw some darts in the wall and we'll see what sticks. But a more realistic thing is, to be honest, most people just pay the minimum, and in 20 years it's just forgiven. And that's a really unfortunate, kind of crappy, realistic plan.
That's been my plan.
Right. But that also doesn't, it's not great because it doesn't motivate you to earn more money, to be honest, because then just more of it goes. And also it still pigeonholes you a little bit. I assume you rent and you don't own, right? You don't like own, you don't have loans or debts on any other thing besides this, right?
Yeah, I rent, but oh, that was another thing. So it was like the first, when we got this place, it was the first time, and like, I was like, because my parents have always had to co-sign for me, because I'm a student, and I have credit,
Yeah.
My credit's decent now, and I'm an adult, and I'm a doctor, and so it was the first time when I applied for this place that I was like confident, and I like, wasn't like nervous submitting the application, and then it got rejected, and I was like, why did it get rejected? And they were like, well, you have $300,000 debt. So then I had to, I'm 32 years old and I'm a doctor and my mom still had to co-sign my lease for me.
And you know what? That's going to happen. Unfortunately, the unfortunate truth is if you want to get a car, if you want to really do anything.
Forever.
And that, once again, with the millions of people that are in the same situation, one, is it just a terrible system. That's a whole other show. That's just the stupidest system. And two, that's really not a great way to live life. I mean, it's not fair for you because you wanted to be a chiropractor, that you don't get to live the same life as someone who, well, you know, didn't have to do that, or maybe someone whose parents was able to pay more for school or something. That doesn't seem fair at all.
No, my brother has no debt.
Right. He's probably living great. Maybe he could...
He can pay my loan for me.
So, anyways, I would say that...
Actually, I will say my brother is a basketball agent. And he's been doing it since he was so young, so he never had to go to college or anything. He's really successful. But he did say, this is so sweet, he's my little brother. He said this a few years ago when I graduated. He goes, when I really make it really big and make a lot of money, the first thing I want to do is pay Deanna's loans.
Yeah.
Which is so sweet.
It's that's very nice of him.
That's so sweet.
He'd have to land a pretty big client. So let's kind of reel it back in a little bit and go towards the how do you manage such a big elephant when you feel like, you know, you're just taking tiny little bites out. And the first thing you have to do is you have to understand your situation a little bit more. And I know that's not fun. So you need to know more about the interest rates. You need to learn a little bit more about the loan period. You have to learn a little bit more about if there's ways to restructure it or find some forgiveness or move it around. And if you haven't done that, you gotta work with someone or do some research on that end, to be honest, because you have to understand that more before you can tackle the next steps. And the next steps would be also understanding your budget. And, you know, have you done a budget of your own finances and your own life besides the student loans?
So I do have a budget, a monthly budget that I do. I use the app You Need a Budget, and that's really helpful.
Okay, good.
I was really bad with finances, and I was one of those people that would swipe their debit card and, like, hold their breath every single time. I mean, for years and years, until it was actually the beginning of COVID that I mean, I was a little bit better than that last year, but that I actually like got, you know, I had time when we were closed for 6 weeks. And I really just like sat down and downloaded that app and actually like figured out my budget. So I actually have like some savings, okay, now, not a lot. And I actually like have like the next month planned, as far as my budget goes. So I'm becoming a little bit more of a responsible grown up in that way. But other than that, I mean, this is all so new to me. And then the next thing is that, I mean, it's also about thinking about the next step in my career and what to do with that financially, because like the next step of my career, my aspirations are to either start my own practice, mm-hmm, or eventually buy the practice where I currently work from the current owner when she's ready to retire. So those are kind of like the two ways I would go as of now. But like just for the, just to play the scenario out, if I were to start my own practice in the next couple of years, right? When I say I have money saved, I have like $3,000 in my savings account.
Right.
Right. And I have like, I don't know how much in my checking, but that's like, I mean, I have $3,000 saved and I have $300,000
in debt. Right.
And I want to, and if I want to start a practice, like, what do I even do?
It's not going to happen. No, like, one's going to lend you the money because you're either credit score or the debt. Right. So, and that's also the problem. It's this revolving door of like, hey, get this education. And now you can't do anything in your life because you spent all your money to get the education and we're not going to help you get out of debt. So it's just, yeah. It's just
right, exactly. Evolving. There's like no way I can get the loan.
So I wouldn't, while those are, I know that that's kind of a farther out thing and that's, it is important to think about. I think you have to reel it back in and figure out more how you have to tackle the student loan debt. And I don't think throwing more money at it is a good solution, to be honest.
Throwing more money at the debt.
Yeah, at the student loan debt is not a good solution.
Like, I'm not wrong that I'm not paying like $30 a month.
No.
While it's frozen for COVID to like tackle
no.
it.
Like, it's just ridiculous. It's just wasted money because no matter what you throw at it, that's too big. So that's why there has to be, so that's where it becomes a bigger picture thing. We have to look at the options. So you have to figure out what, because once again, while this sucks, you're not the only person who's ever been in this situation. That's just not possible. And there's other people who have been in this. So we have to do some research. You have to do some work figuring out. And that's something that might be a better off this conversation, because that would be a whole thing in the weeds, especially for you. But to figure out what your options are, you have to really know that first. Otherwise, you're just kind of throwing money at things and hoping it works. And that's never a good plan for
money.
Right, for anything. You know, I've worked with some people who have a much smaller version of yours, and it was a little bit more manageable. You know, maybe it was 20 or 30 or 50,000, and that we could handle. This is once again a whole other animal, but it also, you're not alone. So I would say you need to tackle what the options are first. Don't pay anything more than the minimum before you really figure out what the advantages are, what the disadvantages are, and what your options are in terms of going somewhere else and doing other things. So I know that's a little vague, but for now, that's going to be my best discussion and recommendation for you to do to then figure that out. How you figure that out or what you do is, that's up to you, to be honest. But
So is refinancing something I should consider, or is that something that you can't even answer? Yeah, I should.
Yes, you do. I just can't speak on any of the specifics, especially right now. But
okay, so I guess my next question.
Yes, let's go to question two.
What is refinancing?
Yeah, so that's.
When we talk about refinancing, people are always like, "Oh, refinance." And I have a vague idea of what it means, but I don't really know what it is.
So I'm going to use a very simplistic view of it, so you and the audience who maybe have a lesser understanding of this understand what it is. But essentially, refinancing is you have all this debt and the people that you owe the money to realize, okay, this person's never going to pay this off. This is 0% chance. Like, this money is too much. The interest rate I'm charging is too much. They're just going to either declare bankruptcy or which isn't always a bad option, or they're just going to pay the minimum and then eventually, right, it's going to swallow them up. So refinancing ends up being you settle with a debt company or multiple debt companies to be like, okay, I'm never going to pay this amount, but instead I'll pay you, you know, half, or I'll pay you, you know, a third, or I'll pay you, you know, a certain amount a month. We'll just do $500 a month for 10 years and we're done. Right. Because they know that if they don't do this, they're probably never going to get that amount. And in fact, they might not get anything. So a lot of times this is a way for them to get something and have it be beneficial for you and them. Right. The problem is that with student loans, it works differently than with like a car payment or a credit card debt, which a lot of times with credit card debt, you can just work with a different company, professional debt refinancing companies. They pay that off for you, and then you owe them a certain amount of money every month, and then they could strike a deal. So student loan debt might work the same way. And once again, I don't have a huge amount of experience with this amount of money, but essentially refinancing it is being like, okay, listen, I'm not paying this. This is ridiculous. If you ever want to see any amount of this money, we need to come up with a legitimate agreement that is going to allow me to keep living my life and not swallow me in debt, and then you could actually get some money from it. So that's how it would work. And a lot of times there are third parties, there's government organizations. Who knows if there's a chiropractic organization that helps people like you. That's why research has to be done, because I don't know what's out there for your specific need, but it's out there because, once again, refinancing is, it happens. You know, people's debt spiral out of control. And
so how does refinancing affect your credit?
Yeah, so it will go on your credit, especially if you got, sometimes it's a bankruptcy, and it'll go on your credit score as a bankruptcy, but it doesn't necessarily, depending on what type of bankruptcy, it could be a bankruptcy, depending on what type you file for, it's not as terrible for the long term as you think. And if you get out of it and going forward, you actually stay disciplined and can and pay things off, and you don't get like, you don't build it up and go out of hand again, you actually could climb yourself out of this stuff fairly quickly if you stick to a plan for the second time. A lot
I
of people
spend myself out of bad credit once. I don't want to do it again.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I don't have the specifics on how it would exactly affect it, but
my credit score in my 20s was like, I'm not, it was in the 400s.
That's not good. What is it now?
It's in the like low to mid 700s.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Well, so this is what happened. This is my story. Okay. So my parents, no Jewish American princess from the North Shore of Chicago. I had credit cards that my, you know, in my name in high school.
Uh-huh.
And my parents, part of why they did that was to build my credit.
Right.
So then I was 18, and this was like right, we turned 18 right when like the economy collapsed, right? So my friends would apply for credit cards, and they couldn't even get like a $500 credit limit without like a cosign from their parents.
Right.
I had two credit cards with $15,000 credit limits in my name, and these were not the credit cards that my parents were paying off. So that was free money for 18-year-old Deanna.
Right.
And I mean, I just went crazy, and then I got a North Shore. I mean, I had, so by the time I was 22, I had like $30,000 of credit card debt and not a lick of responsibility or concept of money or anything because, and so anyway, so then I just, I mean, I destroyed my credit. So, yeah, and so that was, so I don't even know what happened with that debt, honestly, but I know that my credit score was, like, in the 400s for most of my 20s, and then, you know, I think it's, like, 7 years, and then it gets, like, rectified.
Yeah.
So it was just as I was graduating from chiropractic school, all of my credit was, like, in the, because all through chiropractic school, all my student loans, that's the other thing, is my parents had to co-sign all of my loans. So I can't mess it up because it's going to mess up their credit too. But so it was like I finally graduated. My credit at that point got into was like the high 600s, which was really hard for me.
Yeah.
And now it's like the mid 700s because I've been really good. But I don't want to mess it up again.
Yeah. And I couldn't speak once again. I don't know. Don't think bankruptcy is actually the exact solution for you. It was more of a higher level thing. But the bigger picture is you might have to, a credit score might have to get sacrificed in this situation. It might have to get sacrificed in this situation in order for you to bring and that level of debt down to a manageable amount. And that's what I'm saying about all the research and stuff. So until that's done, a lot of this stuff is hypothetical, but having to sacrifice something is, I almost guarantee that that's going to be the case. You're going to have to sacrifice something here, maybe a few things, possibly in the short term. The idea is to do it as short as possible to get you out of this debt. And that's the question is what, right? What it's going to be, what the exact amount is, and how to go about doing it. And that's where I say, take it offline. Once again, once again, I have a conversation with you or do some research on your own. But that is the unfortunate reality is when you're in that situation, you're going to have to find some ways and make some sacrifices to get that done. Because if you keep doing what you're doing, obviously, you know, you could wait 23 years and then it'll be forgiven. I don't think you want to wait that long. No.
Rich husband.
So
just keep circling back to the rich husband.
That's funny, actually. I'm glad you brought that up. And that's what I love working with people, especially younger people on, is I let them, let's say that's plan A. I'm going to give you that. How about you keep working on plan A for you and rich husband? Yeah. And I'll work on your plan B, right? And that's what I do for people. I let them work on their plan A of winning the lottery or having a rich husband or wife or spouse or whoever they want, or, you know, inheriting a bunch of money or doing something that'll be really awesome. And then I'll work on their plan B, which is a little bit more realistic and more analytical and more nerdy of, you know, finance and money and
babe,
stuff.
You don't think I can get a rich husband, Ross. I can get a rich husband if I want a rich husband.
And then we make it a competition. We'll see which one of us can get to your plan first, right? See? See? Exactly. So we'll do that. So I'm gonna give that and close that out for answer. That was that question two?
I don't know, question two or three.
Okay. So
question three.
Okay.
Question
three. Okay, perfect. So throw me your next question.
Together, but yes. Question one was refinance, and then question two was do I bother paying the minimum.
Right. Yeah, we went over that, which I would say would be until you come up with a plan and we figure things out more. No, I wouldn't, to be honest.
Just pay what I have to pay and don't pay anything
else
because that's stupid.
Yeah, it is. Unless you know more information, you're just wasting money. So yeah, just to reiterate. Yeah, okay. So now we're on question four.
Question three was what is refinancing?
Okay.
And then question four, so question four, this is kind of a different subject, but just all around the lines of, I guess, my financial situation. So it's kind of all the same. And again, I know so little about finance. I had to ask my dad to help me even like with these questions because I like so don't know. I was like, I don't even know what I don't know. Like, that's how ignorant I am about this stuff. It's like complete. So anyway, but he was saying that so in my current situation, I'm paid as an employee at the practice where I work. So I'm not an independent contractor or anything.
Yeah.
I do have a very, very modest business on the side, very small business on the side, like a couple $100 a month. But because of that, I've been told that if I incorporate as an LLC or an S corp, I would save in taxes. Is that something I should consider? Now, also keep in mind that some point down the line, I will probably start a practice or do something else. So it would
move
me some point to have something.
Yeah. First of all, I'm going to go back to what you said, which I'm very glad you said. And there's nothing wrong with saying you don't really know what you don't know about this stuff. You basically feel like you're the bar is on the floor when it comes to finance and money. And I'm glad you said that because the goal of this podcast is actually geared for exactly people like you and your age and demographic who have that lower or minimal understanding of this stuff so they could listen to this podcast and everyone else ask similar questions as you do and hopefully learn some stuff about that and feel that they're not alone. And there's millions of people as well who were failed by our school system who didn't teach them any of this stuff when they should have in, you know, when they were growing up. So anyways,
I would like to say, as ignorant as I am about money, I am very educated on the spine and the nervous system, and I am a very good
right. Yeah, as much as
listeners know that I am actually
we know you're not. Yeah, as much as you know about that is as little as I know about human body, right? It's the same thing. Just like someone, just because someone, you know, didn't go to Harvard, that doesn't mean people aren't really smart, right? You know, people might not be good at money, but, you know, they could fix a car like it's nobody's business, or, you know, whatever.
I can fix the spine like it's nobody's business. They could fix posture like it's nobody's business.
We're all very good at what we do. And the idea is that if you're not feeling comfortable in some of these things about finance or money, that's fine and that's normal. That's why I'm here to help, or millions of people like me who want to help you, because we are good. You know, I've been doing this for a while, and I have degrees just like you do, and we're in our field and we're here to help. All you got to do is ask. So back to your question about the LLC. So first I'm going to ask you, and feel free if you don't feel comfortable sharing, that's fine. What is your side hustle?
So I've got a very, so Melaleuca it's like a network marketing business. My parents have been doing it for 28 years. They've made a few million dollars in supplemental income on it. I've never really been super interested in like actually building a Melaleuca business, but because I've been in it, around it my whole life, and I use the products and stuff, it just kind of, I have some people that I've recommended the products to. And so that's given me, I make a few hundred dollars a month doing it very passively. But it's enough. I mean, I know, again, like last year I was going to owe in taxes. And then my dad and accountant did something with I don't know what they did, but because of that, the Melaleuca business, which at that point I was only making like $20. I mean, I was really not used to doing it at all, but because I had that business, they were able to, I end up getting $500 back.
Okay. So first, on a side note, I'd love to see that tax return, because I'm very interested. Second, okay. So I'm not a CPA, right? I'm not an accountant, but I do work with them to kind of get the bigger picture together. And the answer to your question is yes, having an LLC or an S corp or whatever, C corp, you know, sole proprietorship, whatever you want to say, can help with taxes. Cost some money to set it up. Now, maybe you and your dad or your accountant know someone that can help you do this, you know, cheaply or for free as a pro bono. So that matters. Two, if this is something that you're not considering to, like, if you're just going to keep doing this to the small degree you are and make a few thousand dollars a year, it's probably
not worth open doing. Yeah.
But if it's something that you think you're going to grow, or if it's something you think, if you have a business in the future and you'd want to lump it all together, that might help. It sounds like you're buying and selling like beauty products or something.
But it's clean. It's wellness products.
Wellness products.
It's not
okay.
Cleaning products and stuff. And you don't buy them. It's not, but whatever. I won't get into the logistics of it. You're not selling anything, but it is network marketing, and it's like a referral based program. So yeah, and no, I don't ever really see I mean, it's a wonderful company. Anyone who uses Melaleuca, I mean, it's absolutely 100% fabulous. I've been using the products my entire life, and I won't get into the benefits of non-toxic products with the doctor, but it's a wonderful company.
Okay.
Anyway, but however, it's just never been I've never cared to actually pursue it. But it does give me the option to incorporate whatever it's called.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you could always incorporate it later as well. If you're going to open your own business and start a chiropractic business, then yes, you would open it then.
I guess that's where my dad's coming from.
You can open it then.
That's what I understand. It's like, if I'm going to have to incorporate down the line anyway to start my chiropractic business,
do it then.
Should I just
do
it?
No.
No, do it then.
Unless you had someone, you had a connection, someone you knew who could set this up for really cheap or free.
How much does it cost?
I don't know. It would depend on, that's why I'd have to see a tax return. But
at this point, I'd probably pay more to incorporate than I would how much I'm making in Melaleuca plus what I would save in tax.
Unless you had a hookup or someone who you knew who could set this up for less than a market rate or pro bono. Otherwise, if it was a regular thing in the industry, you really wouldn't be saving too much. It'd probably cost a good amount. Now, the good thing is you could deduct the expense of setting it up against your income. So that would help. But, you know, it's just, like I said, for a few hundred bucks a month, unless you really want to have an LLC, or like I said, unless you know someone who can do it for you for free or cheap. No, I don't. I would say it's not worth it. I'd have to look at the tax return to confirm that, but no.
I'll show you my tax return. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where it is, but I would show it to you if you really want to see it.
I would love to see it. I'd like that, just like you.
Remind
like.
Remind me when we're off air to text me, and I will get you that tax return.
Yeah, I have some more on the student loan stuff, but that, I mean, that's, I'm glad that they brought that up, because that is a good point. You know, people who drive for Uber and maybe have a second job, I mean, if you're making $1,000, $2,000 a month as a 1099 person, which, like, I'm all 1099, just so you know. It's, then you start thinking about having a corporation set up. But, you know, sometimes it depends what the corporation is. Sometimes you have to have a patent. Sometimes there's legal expenses and stuff that come along with it that I can't get into, because that's a whole rabbit hole. But depending on your work and your industry and all that stuff, yeah, if you're making a considerable amount of money, a few thousand dollars a month, you probably want to look at it and do it, especially if it's growing in the future. But it sounds like yours is not that situation, which is why I would say for now, you're probably okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, for now it's not that situation, but I guess also if I, anything else that I do outside of what I do in my practice, like at my office,
is 1099.
I would probably under LLC, right? Like right now, yes. If I do anything on the side, which I do, I, you know, if I coach someone or do,
yeah,
I kind of do, because I do it a solo scale. It's all just kind of cash or Venmo or whatever. I don't even write it off or anything, which I should. I don't ever, like,
you need to track
business. Well, not, track, I don't even that. Keep track of my business expenses.
Yeah, you have to do that.
Like vaguely. Yeah. Write what I think at the end when I do my taxes. But I guess if I started to do that on any larger scale,
yes,
then I could maybe want to incorporate.
Yes, it absolutely.
And how much I'm making.
Yeah.
So, okay, I guess this is my I guess you kind of answered this, but I guess my 4B question, or maybe you can kind of say that, is how much money should I be making outside of my actual job? Like, how much money should I be bringing in each month to make it worth incorporating?
Well, that's also, yeah, that's also a difficult question, because there's not necessarily an exact dollar amount, but,
right.
But a lot of it also helps on the expense side, right? So if you're making $500 a month, but it doesn't cost you anything to do that, then there's less advantages, actually, than if you're, like I said, driving for Uber, or if it's costing you to make a product, or there's cost of goods sold, or there's, for me, you know, my licenses, my platform technology fee, whatever it costs to make this podcast, right? All that stuff. That is stuff I get to deduct directly from my 1099 income, so, right. Which I want to do. Like, I work from home, which I'm excited for. Now I'm going to have all these insane work from home deductions I'm going to get to do. So if you use your home for a business, like I said, if you made $2,000 a year doing this, I'm sure you could find a way that you had $2,000 of expenses and your net income of your business would be zero or negative, but that's still a small amount, right? That's why I'd have to look at your tax return. But if you have physical, if you had to buy a computer for your business, if you had to, if you have capital, if you have, you know, cost of goods, you know, if you're making, you know, candles or stuff and things cost money, then yes, you should incorporate, no matter how small it is. Especially if you're like, okay, I might not be making a lot now, but my goal is to grow. If your goal is to grow, then let's be optimistic and let's set it up with the hopes that you're gonna grow, right? But if you've literally said, Ross, I don't really like doing that, what was it called again? With an M.
With no loop.
Yeah. If I don't like doing that, I'm doing it, this is what I make, and I'm not going to put any time or effort into it, that's a different story. But if you're putting time or effort into your 1099 anything outside, then maybe that is a good thing to do, because if you put time and effort into it, it should grow over time, right? And usually there's money involved, to be honest. So that's where a tax form would help, and another conversation. That's also where I work with people on, too, on that stuff, because that's also out of most people's expertise, is when to do that. what I should be doing as business expenses, how I should be tracking that. If I have net income, how I could put my income into some type of retirement so then that shields me from taxes. You know, let's say you made $2,000 and you were an LLC. Instead of having to pay taxes on that, you could just throw it all into a SEP IRA for yourself in your business that would be incorporated, that then would be shielded from any creditors if you declared bankruptcy and had to restructure your student loan debts. You see how there's lots of layers? There's no way that someone like you or anyone would really know the complexities of that. It's just not right. And Googling that is not a good way to do it. So that's why I'm saying that these require more in-depth conversations. And that's why I'm glad we're doing this, because it's a good starting point. But there are answers. What you're struggling with, there are answers and solutions for. It's just not always there in front of you and requires a little bit more research or thought. And you definitely need to figure out enough about you and what you want to do and what your goals are to help drive those as well. So it's a little bit of you do your goals and you figure out things, and then I apply my expertise and together we make it happen. Because usually without one or the other, it's hard to work. So hopefully that helps you and everyone else who's in your similar situation that's, struggling with student loans and money and life and the revolving door of, debt that life is thrown at them.
Yes, that is very helpful. So,
question five. My
last question is, and I kind of touched on this earlier, but to actually make it a question. So again, this would be, I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, in the near future, as far as my job goes. But for the sake of this question and this podcast, let's say that I was, because I have friends who are starting practices right now, or who have, who have already started practices. And when I even think about that again, I don't even know if that's the route I am going to go. I might end up taking over this practice, or who knows what I do. But when I think about the idea of starting a practice, I'm like, how, again, with my debt or with, I am putting money. I've never saved money in my life. So the fact that I've got $3,000 in my savings account is a
big good job. Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah.
Not money to start a practice with.
No.
And support myself as I'm building a practice, obviously. And at the rate I'm saving money, it would be a long time before I were to actually put that money away on my own. And as we've established, I've got massive debt.
Yes.
So short of, I honestly think if I were to really be serious about opening a practice, I probably could get my parents to loan me money. But I know, first of all, a lot of people don't have that that safety net.
Right.
And honestly, that safety net of my parents is probably why I'm such a financial idiot at this point, because I've never had to really learn these things.
Maybe not.
At least I know that.
Yeah.
So anyway, short of getting a loan from my parents, because also I am an adult and I do want to be independent and do things on my own, right? And not always have to go to mommy and daddy until I die, or I guess until I die. What do I have options? No way I could go to a bank and get a business loan.
No.
Right? Because I have $300,000 of debt.
No.
But what would my options be if I wanted
So
start a practice.
I keep pointing it back to the fact that this is not something, for the most part, that you or the collective you can really do on your own. Because the only way you're going to get that is you have to come up with not only a Dr. Deanna life plan, but a business plan. And the reason why is, let's say you go to your parents, or let's use just any VC or someone who's going to invest in a business that they think is going to make money. And you say, we know you're competent, right? We're going to take off the board. You've already established your credentials. You know what you're doing. You have rave reviews on Google. People can attest to you helping them and all that stuff. I'm going to let you know that really doesn't mean that much. Okay. To be honest, you have to have a plan of where I'm going to open a shop, how I'm going to market and attract customers, what the cash flow is going to look like, what the revenue is going to be, how it's going to look over time. Because that's, for the most part, even for your parents, they don't want to just give you money and have it go out in the wind and not have a plan. So coming to them or anyone else and saying, I'm going to be a chiropractor, I'm going to help them and build a business that way, that's not gonna be good enough. You're gonna have to come up with specifics. You're gonna have to come up with a business plan, which is also what I said, what I like working with people on to do that for, is working with business plans, because it's taking your vision, but using my skills or professional skills to get it all, the quantitative, the numbers, the stuff that, to be honest, most people don't want to take the time and energy to do because it's not fun. It's boring. It may be hard. It might be out of their comfort level, but that's the only way you're going to get it. But if you came to them or someone else with a legitimate business plan with, this is not only what I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to make money, this is how we're going to market people, this is how we're going to be different, right? This is the name. This is where we're going to be. This is why this is better than the competition. This is why it's going to work. This is what the numbers, this is what the competitors do. And you throw all that in front of them, and while it's not going to be exact, one, people are going to take it more seriously, and people want to invest in people that aren't just like, la, 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 I'm going to open this and maybe it'll work. You know, that might work in the movies and TV shows, but this is real life. People aren't spending hundreds of thousands of dollars because you might have a good idea. It's not how it works. Second is, it helps make it a little more concrete. They'll be like, oh, you put some research into it. You put some time into it. You understand what you're getting into. You understand the cost of doing business. You know, you could run some numbers by. So that would be my recommendation. If you're serious about it, you're going to have to do a business plan, and you're going to have to make sure it's thorough and it's going to well thought out. But if it is, and then you could compound that with, you know, right now I'm sure you're like, I could easily prove that I'm good at what I do, but getting someone to give me the money is, right, that's the hard part. Right. So you let someone else do the hard part for you and you just focus on what you're good at. And then if you get that done, then all you have to do is prove that you're a good chiropractor and you're friendly and you can talk to people and you can bring people in. And for you, that's going to be the easy part. Right. Mm-hmm. And for most people who are running a restaurant, who are doing different things like that, that's where they struggle. You know, once again, restaurants, my brother has a restaurant, and a lot of restaurants fail. And it's not because their food wasn't delicious. Okay, it's because they were terrible at running a business. They didn't have a plan. They didn't know how much their sandwiches cost. They didn't understand that their payroll was insanely high and their rent was crazy. So once you have all that figured out, you at least want to fail or not get what you need, maybe because it was you and your vision and not because you didn't have all the numbers and the stuff backing you up.
Well, yeah, that's chiropractors. Right. The most successful chiropractors are not the best chiropractors.
No, listen, doctors, lawyers are very smart people and they're good at what they're doing, but they're just as bad with money as you are or the regular person.
Well, yeah.
You're lucky because you're smart enough to acknowledge that you don't know anything. So you're actually, you're ahead of them. It's like the thing where people know just enough to actually be dangerous and do more harm than good, which is how it works in our industry. That really, I would say 9 out of 10 people, no matter how smart they are, really shouldn't be doing most of this on their own. And they have to be working with a professional because that's how it works. Just like for me, I'm doing my money and managing my own finances, but I'm not going at home and working on my back on myself. That would be crazy. Right. I mean, I might ask my fiance Haley to work out a knot or two, but that's not professional. I know that I need a professional to help me with that. And same with my car, right? If my car breaks down or something, I'm not just opening up the hood and just ripping things out or going on YouTube. Right. That's a Jewish thing. Yeah, we won't get into that. But for the most part, yes, some people, you know, 10% of people can just go on YouTube or just figure it out. But 90% of us have to go to the experts for those things to do it. Dentists, I could go on and on and on about this stuff. So the same thing applies there, is that you have your vision, it sounds like. You have your point where you want to get to. But you need to get all that stuff figured out, a plan, a business identity, do some research. All that stuff has to go into it. You need to figure out if that's something you want to do, if you want to partner with someone, whatever all that stuff is. Those are things you have to figure out and get it done, because, man, I can't tell you how powerful it'll be if you show up to your parents or anyone else interested in investing and you sound smart, well-organized, you have a plan, you have something physical to present to them, you have a boring PowerPoint, right? And then they're going to be much more likely to be on board. Let's just say that. I don't want people to fail at this because they didn't get that right, which is how it works. Watch some Shark Tank episodes if you haven't.
Just thinking about sharks.
Yeah, it's similar. I mean, that's how you have to go in the mindset. They could give a crap if you bring on the new flavored ice cream or whatever it is. They don't care. They don't give a crap about that. They want to know how you're going to make money, what your margins are, and why they should trust you with it. And right. There's a reason why they're the sharks on the show, because they're the best at knowing what makes successful businesses. So you have to have that mindset as well. And once again, if you don't have that side, once again, I work with people on that, but you can find a permanent partner. There's not a million, but other people who might have that skill set or outsource or something to do to get that done, because that's the only way it's going to happen. Even if your parents gave you the money without the plan because they're so generous and trusting, it probably will fail if you haven't thought about all those things anyways, right. To be honest. Right. And so that's why I'm saying to look at all those stuff. However, chiropractic businesses are pretty successful. So we know that if you could come up with the plan and get the money, you know, there's a lot of positives, a lot of upside to this, to doing it and getting all that work done and figuring out all the, you know, from your point of view, the boring stuff I'm not good at, things I don't like to do. And that's just the plight of being a business owner. But I would say it's possible. It seems cloudy and shrouded and you're like, okay, here I am. And that's where I want to be. I don't get it, right? How do I bridge the gap? How do I get from A to B?
Yes.
But it's possible. Like I said, I'm...
daunting.
Yeah. Like I'm saying, I'm here. I know how to do it. I work with people on that, but so do a lot of other people. And there's just ways to do it. But it's not easy. You know, the last thing I'll say for this point is that this is hard. This is hard work. It requires time. It requires energy. It could require some money. And it's the reason why not everyone does it. So you have to be willing to understand that while plan A might be the get-rich-quick scheme with the sheik or the rich husband or whatever your fun plan is, plan B is not. Or we could reverse plan A and plan B, whatever you want to do. One plan might be the hope and a prayer, but plan B is the more realistic one, which is it's not easy. I mean, once again, there's a reason why not everyone achieves these goals, because it's hard. It really is. It's yes. hard. It's hard work.
And for the record, I will get a rich husband, but I want to do this on my own. I'm not going to let any man bail me out. So
there we go.
I will get the rich husband, but he isn't plan A or B, because I'm going to do it on my
own. That'll be once you're rich, then it'll be a lot easier. So
exactly. Then we'll be rich husband, rich wife.
Yeah, exactly. Power couple. But that's really it. Yeah, I would say that. You know, first figure out how important these things are to you, right? Maybe you've just thought about it, and when you go back to bed, you're like, maybe it's just not that important, or maybe it's not that important right now. But if you decide after thinking about it, yeah, this is what I want, which you need to be committed to this stuff. You can't do this stuff half-ass. Then, you know, go all in and make sure you get it done and do whatever it takes to do that and commit to it and get all that business planning and all the finance stuff and all that in order. So you can just go out and write and be you. And the you is not just you, Deanna, but, you know, everyone else who has a similar dream and a hope and a wish and a goal out there that is struggling to get there, because life is hard, to be honest. It's really it, right? It's hard. So hopefully that helped a little bit. I like to be positive, because it is possible. It's just possible with hard work. You know, you don't just luck into having a good business. It's just not how it happens. Even if you have a great idea, even if you're great at what you do, you don't just luck into it. And I hate that the movies and TV shows make it look so simple, but it's a lot of hard work. People don't get there without that, the thought, the time, the sweat, the tears that goes into it. And especially now, if you're single, you should have a little bit more time than, you know, in the future, if you had kids and were married, and you might not have the time or the energy later as you get older. So true. Now's the time to do it, especially for people. Hopefully that helped answer that question. And once again, be positive.
Very helpful, Ross. Seriously, I'm excited for this episode to come out so I can reference it.
Yeah, that'll be good. And hopefully other people feel similarly encouraged and empowered to do so themselves as well. That was it, right? That was question five.
That was question five. You got them all.
Awesome. Thanks.
Just under the hour.
Yeah, thanks. Well, we don't have a time limit, but that's been my, experience so far. It's been under an hour. But yeah, thanks for joining me, Dr. Deanna, on this episode of The Money Seat. Thanks for sharing your story and asking such personal questions. I feel like, you know, got to know you much better, and hopefully the audience feels that way as well. You know, we appreciate that and sharing that time.
Well, thank you so much, Ross. And yes, thank you. I hope this helps other people too, because this is very helpful for me.
Perfect. Absolutely. Good talking to you. And we'll see everyone else on another episode of The Money Seat. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.